Tonight's topic is cutting loose the people who say you can't and embracing a new tribe of believers. I've got this picture in my head of this tribe I saw one time. It was a professional photographer, and he saw a friend of his sent him a cell phone picture of these guys in Nigeria, and they were walking around with real like hyenas, those big nasty animals that were in Lion King, and they had these little handmade muzzles on them, and they were walking around with chains, and they had some monkeys. And so this guy had to go find out what was going on, and so he went over to Nigeria and found the people, and they arranged all the logistics of getting them together and allowing him to follow them around. And what he found out was that they were a wandering group of minstrels, and what they did was they captured these wild animals and trained them and then just went from town to town and kind of made money that way. Basically, that was what they did. And it turns out, you know, so that's interesting, right? Okay, that's great. But what I want to kind of kick us off with is thinking about these guys, and I'll send this picture around. It's pretty cool, actually, because it's so striking. And what the interesting thing was when I read about these guys was that it was something that had been passed down for like three generations in their family, and they were actually traditional medicine men, sort of. And what they would do when they did these shows is they would attract people to buy their traditional remedies, and so they actually used these remedies when they went out to hunt these wild animals, and they'd been taught how to do that. And so in their family, as it went down, this was a valued skill, was how do you knowing how to use these medicines and knowing how to take care of these animals. Now, of course, when this European photographer started showing his work around, a lot of people in Europe were really upset about them mistreating these animals. But when they asked these people about it, they're like, you know, we have to feed ourselves, and these animals, we're using them to do what we're brought up to do. And so there was a kind of a clash between what the Europeans thought ought to be done with animals and what the values of this family that have been passed down have been. And so we're going to talk a lot tonight about how families, we'll talk about families, and we're also going to talk about our work tribes and then how they influence us now, and then how can they help us going forward to really accelerate our progress in doing something that is really special to us, that's part of what we're here to do and what y'all are all here to do. And then the kind of how-to part of tonight is I'm going to tell you where you can find new tribes to test them out and to start meeting some different people who might see you in a different light. And then we'll talk about when you start to do that, how do you interact with them? There's some ways to do that make that more comfortable for you and to make that easier. I'll teach you that tonight. And then finally, what I'd love to do is take some volunteers, and we'll take something that you want to try, and we'll do a real-time brainstorming and see if we can find a place for you to go meet some of those people. So, again, the logistics, like every week, definitely interactive call, so jump in and ask questions like you all are all real good at doing. I am recording it, so use your first name, and please introduce yourself whenever you make a comment. If you want to mute yourself, you can use *6 to mute, and then *6 again to unmute. And then I'll be putting the recording on the website, and I'll send you a link once I get that set up so you can download it with the notes from tonight. All right, does everybody remember the TV show The Munsters?
Oh, yeah.
I saw it in reruns, right? It was the black and white. It wasn't the Addams Family, but it was the other ones like that. And the Munsters were the ones where the dad was Herman, and he looked like Frankenstein, and his wife looked like the Bride of Frankenstein, and the granddad lived there. He was a vampire, and little Eddie, who had the little widow's peak on his head. And then they had sort of a normal blonde-haired, blue-eyed daughter who lived with them. And the big joke about the show, or sort of the hook of this TV show, was that they, besides the fact that they were all, you know, monster characters, they were totally normal. I mean, I remember Herman would kind of tromp off to work every day with his metal Fred Flintstone type lunchbox and would punch the clock, and he'd come home from work and complain about his boss, and the girl was having trouble meeting people, and the boy played baseball. And the whole joke was that here is this normal family that's normal in every way, except that everybody's totally afraid of them because they look like monsters. So that's kind of a twist on the typical what we think about our family and what they value. Another kind of example of a different kind of family dynamic is a story I read about Steven Spielberg, the director, when he was growing up. And his mom was a really interesting person, apparently. And in fact, there was one time when Steven was really little, he started making these movies at home, and he even started to charge admission for people. He made money on one of the first movies he made. He made like $100 on his $500 production. But there was one particular story that I really love, and he had wanted to make a movie where it was like a horror film, and there was going to be blood like oozing out of the cabinets in the kitchen. And of course, he wants to film this at home. And so his mom gladly went to the store and bought 30 cans of cherries, and then she cooked them for him in this pressure cooker until they had done so many that the pressure cooker exploded and cherries went all over the kitchen. And she said that for years after that, her routine was to go downstairs, put the coffee on, and then, continue to wipe the cherry residue off of the cabinets. So, here's this creative guy, and he grew up in a family that valued his creativity and letting him do what he wanted to, even though maybe at the Munsters' house they wouldn't let them go wild because they were more of a traditional family who wanted to keep the house kind of neat. So those are two examples of families and how they interact. And then kind of on the darker side of how families work together, I think about the scene in the second Godfather movie where Michael Corleone kisses his brother Fredo, and he says, "Fredo, you're nothing to me now. You're not my brother. You're not my friend. I don't want to know what you do or what you see." And he said, "You broke my heart." And that was it. And at that point, Fredo was not even was less than nothing to him anymore, not part of the family. And that was for breaking one of their rules in their family, which we all know about, all those sort of rules. So, and I tell you these stories to get you thinking about how different families interact. I think family is the first place where we start to understand what a tribe is. It's our first tribe. And a tribe is just a group of people who have a certain way of acting together. And one of the funny things about a tribe is that you see, especially with families, I think, is that you really don't know what the rules are that are sort of unwritten in your house about what you do or don't do. I know my mom would have been pretty pissed if I had blown cherries up all over the kitchen. But yet, then when you see other families that seem strange to you, I think that's where you see that juxtaposition of what's normal and what's not normal. So it's hard to see what's going on and what are the rules that kind of govern your house unless you break them. And then what happens? What happens when you break the rules in any kind
Grounded.
of practice? Grounded, right? Right. Exactly. You get grounded, you get punished, you get told, you get shown how you weren't, following the unspoken rules or the spoken rules of this pack of people that we live in. And so we only learn by kind of getting smacked back, and then sometimes you get praise for different things too. But most of the time, things are kind of in a steady state, and you don't really see those that much. And it's just kind of what you know and how things are. And that's true of any kind of group, because really the function of the group, if you thought of the, it's just kind of weird to juxtapose, but I mean, if you think about the group as being something itself outside of the people that belong to the group really wants to keep things stable and wants to keep that family together and doesn't want trouble. And so these rules are to make things kind of go slowly. And they're unspoken, and they get worked out between the people, but they're different from group to group to group. So what we're going to talk about a lot tonight is that these unspoken rules really influence you, even though you don't think about it. And it's really important to be able to take a step out of that and maybe find some other groups that can help you. So we're going to talk more about that in just a little bit. A couple other group examples of groups just to get you thinking. One is this TV show Gossip Girl that's real popular. Do you all watch that? Do you all watch that?
Sure, what's the name of it?
It's called Gossip Girl.
Oh, no.
It's I have a middle school daughter who loves it, and so I'm hooked on it now. It's basically a soap opera, but it follows these kids who live in Manhattan and are really wealthy and you know super super wealthy, and they have everything in the whole world. And that's an example where I look at the sort of values that they have, and there was one. I look at the values that they have, and they are really different than most of us. And one of the shows this season, the title of the show was You've Got Yale, like Yale University. And Serena, Blair, and Dan, and the rest of the seniors were all trying to find out who could get early admission to Yale. Because in their group, apparently if you didn't get into Yale, your life was basically going to be over. So one of the girls finds out she's accepted, and a lot of drama ensues. But, you know, to me it's just kind of funny from the outside, and I think most people would think it's funny that that defines your whole life. But I think there are things like that probably in our own lives that we've never really questioned that we did assume. Like in my family, we always knew we were going to go to college, and family relationships were important. We always went to people's houses with my cousins for Thanksgivings and Christmases, you know, but we weren't like a big sports family. I know a lot of other families who do a lot of outdoor activities, for example. So are y'all getting my drifts on the whole family scene?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Here, we got that. Okay. So another thing, so those are kind of the family things. And then some other groups that we all kind of run across are things like that are maybe more positive or more obvious what their traits are, stuff like the Boy Scouts. You know, you've got the badges. There's a clear path of things you need to do. There's the Boy Scout motto. Does anybody know what that is? Be prepared. So you've got and then there are other kind of groups too that are really kind of supportive. I mean, we talked about Godfather being a bad example, but I think about like the UNC women's soccer team and some of my girls' soccer teams, and just how excited they are when they all win, and how supportive they are, and how much that they all care about each other as people, and they want to work together to win, and they have a common goal, and the goals are kind of supportive and constructive and positive for the people who are part of that. And that's kind of what we want to find. And when I was a kid, you know, school can be tough sometimes, but I belonged to a church, and we had a woman named Elizabeth who was our youth leader. And from really middle school on through high school, there was a small group of us. We were in a small town, and there weren't many people in the youth group, maybe like 12 people at a time. But that group of people was a real close, and it was almost like a second family that was very supportive, and it was kind of a safe place to go. So that's an example of a positive kind of group that where you kind of know you can just tell by feeling that it's going to be a place where you're okay to be more yourself. So I want to take a break for just a second and get you guys to think about like the best group that you've ever been a part of. You know, use one of these examples I've given or some of the other ones. And then think about the worst group you've ever been a part of, the one that stressed you out the most or that you just didn't like or to give you a bad feeling. So take a couple of minutes. I'll mute myself, and then we'll come back and I'll take some volunteers to talk about that. All right, does anybody want to share something
this
they've
cool
been a part
stuff,
of?
I've got a couple.
Okay.
Well, I have two best groups I ever belonged to. When I was a girl growing up, somewhere to Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts.
Yeah.
Now it's real positive, and we did really cool, fun stuff. We went camping, we did fun activities, and all that type of thing. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And also more recently, a couple years ago, I joined the Business Marketing Association.
Okay.
And it was a really fun group of people, and a really big one too. And really liked that.
Yeah. How about, did you have any examples of ones you didn't like so much?
I joined the Civil Air Patrol a couple years ago, and I was in it for like a year and a half or so.
Okay.
And it was pretty cool at first, and then it kind of went down to like we had these really boring meetings like twice a month, and we didn't really do much at all, and so I basically dropped out.
Okay. That's great. So what were what well, if anybody else want to share one of theirs too, I'll come back to this question. Yeah, for me, I think there were times where I would be in a group like a summer camp that I went to that was really fun, where I had a good group of friends that formed, kind of like one of those times where you just get with a group of people and everybody just clicks, and it's like you've been friends forever, and everybody just kind of gets along, and everything's kind of easy. And then I think about some like work projects I've been on where I've had to work with kind of testy people, and just the pain on my stomach when I had to go to those meetings and deal with all the kind of noise that went around working with them. Well, what were some of the things, Elizabeth, I'll ask you, what were some of the things that were the same between the ones you like, or even the same between what you liked and you didn't like?
Just really fun people, positive, did lots of fun things, had kind of a common goal.
Yeah. And what was the difference between the good ones and the bad ones?
People, I guess, the type of people, like positive versus like more negative, doing versus not doing. I can't really think of anything else.
Yeah, and you talked about like the boring meetings, right? So there's
Yeah.
the more maybe routinized, or they valued process more than
Yeah, you just sit around this big table
results,
and everyone
something.
kind of gave updates or whatever, and some people would get into arguments about taking care of the plane and things
Yeah,
like that. So yeah,
right.
it's almost kind of comical, I guess, looking at it. But it does seem like a huge waste of time because I had to drive like half an hour to get there, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, and it's like funny now, but when you were there, it probably was really frustrating, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
because I drive home, I'm like, why did I go to that? That was such a waste of
Yeah.
my time after working, a long day at work. So yeah, it
Yeah.
wasn't energizing. Okay,
Right.
Girl Scouts and Business Marketing Association, very energizing. Time flew, just really fun. Love being there, and the other, no, not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Those are great examples. So another place that's like the ultimate kind of tribe that we all have to deal with after our families is our workplaces. And my first real job was I worked at a Wendy's, and I had my friends Daryl and Greg worked there, and so they got me an interview with the manager. And I remember getting a ride over there and sitting down, and it was when they had those old tables. You remember they had the little, they looked like old-timey newspapers with the little ads on them and everything. I remember that. And so I sat down with the manager, and they did the little checklist and asked me my questions, and then I got hired. And the first thing they did was they told me, okay, you have to wear navy pants, and then you have to wear this uniform. And they handed me the uniform. And I don't know if you guys probably don't remember, but in the early 1980s when I had this job, if you go to Wendy's today and you look at the sign, and there's a little picture of Wendy, you know, the Wendy the girl with the red hair and the pigtails and all that. Well, she's wearing a shirt that's striped, and it's striped with like really faint baby blue and white. And so what I had to wear was a shirt that kind of looked like that. But the worst part was this hat that we had to wear, and it was like a kind of a really bad, imagine like Bob Hope's kind of golfing cap kind of hat, but the top part was really big, like a giant mushroom or something. And so here I am at my first job, and I'm really learning a hard lesson right away about the power of the tribe of work. And because I'm having to wear something I would sort of never wear before. I mean, I didn't have to have the chicken suit on outside people in, but I think this was almost as bad for me at 16 years old, trying to look cool with my friends. And so that's a real visible reminder that work is a powerful force. And so, Wendy's or a fast food place that are really structured, and I know that's kind of funny. Everybody knows you have to wear those uniforms, and we all know that in a corporate setting too, we have a different kind of uniform, and that you understand, you start to learn what you can wear when and that kind of thing. So, but sometimes there's a, but there is a, I bring this up because you know, there's a darker side to the what can happen in the workplace too. And there's a, the expression that people use kind of flippantly now when they talk about people at work who are kind of suck-ups, you know, the kind of people who are, they kind of do everything the right way and they really play by all the rules and everything. And when a lot of the technology companies I work in, what they say about those people is that, you know, they drank the Kool-Aid because they really buy into everything about the company and they're really passionate about it and everything. And you know, that's a do y'all know where that expression came from originally?
The Kool-Aid thing? Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, that's the cult, right? The
Yep.
Jim Jones cult, which is really tragic. I mean, those people all literally drank Kool-Aid that was laced with cyanide and died. And you know, that might seem kind of dramatic for me to bring that up with work, but in about 3 years ago here in Charlotte, there was a guy, a 43-year-old banker, who worked at Wachovia. And one day he went home from work early and picked up his twin daughters, who were about 5 years old, and he killed them in his house. And then he killed his wife when she came home. And when he, you know, obviously he was suffering depression and had a lot of issues. But one of the, a lot of the things he talked about when they asked him why he did what he did was that, you know, he believed that he hadn't done a good job taking care of his family, and he was afraid he was about to lose his job at in Wachovia. And the sad part of that is that when they talked to Wachovia, it said that they had already planned to give him the biggest bonus ever. He wasn't really in jeopardy. But I think a lot of companies use that kind of anxiety that people feel. Those cultures create that on purpose to keep you on your toes and to keep you worried so that you'll work harder because you're afraid. And this guy, David Crespi, that was a tragic, terrible example of that. But, you know, there's a just a explosion of people, the people who are stressed out. I mean, Olivia, you talked about all the people who are not eating right. You wrote me a great email, talked about how the stress and how people cope with that in bad ways that isn't healthy. And that stress is it's real, and it really has consequences for all of us, but we don't see it. And when we've worked in one company for a really long time, we tend to start thinking that that's normal. And the really bad part of that is you can start to think that there's something wrong with you if you don't fit in with what the rules are that they say. And then, of course, what happens at a big company a lot of times is that you really can't talk about that, the stress either. That's kind of frowned upon, especially at big corporations. So the funny thing is that everybody feels that they're not measuring up, and so they all try harder, and the company wins because they get everybody to work harder. But really, nobody fits in. So, but there's a lot of cost to that. And one way that I think about this, think about the last time that you had maybe a long vacation, like Christmas break or holiday break, or maybe a long summer vacation. So you have that picture in your head. I'm thinking of a hammock on a beach, on a sunny beach. And what one of my modes is, I tend to be the kind of person who wants to come in and, you know, if there's a problem, I want to deal with it, and I want to be real positive and proactive about it. So inevitably, I would be working really hard right up until I left for my vacation. And if it was a long, maybe a break over the holidays around Christmas, you know, the first week I would kind of decompress and unwind. And then the second week would kind of be a little bit of vacation until the couple of days before I went back. And I, you know, inevitably my head would be clear and I'd have like goals written down for January and I would be all enthused again. And, you know, and I'd almost be thinking like, you know, what was wrong with me before the break? I don't know why I was so stressed out. You know, I'm going to go in there and I'm just going to take care of stuff now. And I'm not going to be stressed and I'm just going to organize my work. I'm not going to let it get to me. And I did that, I think, every single year. And then I'd walk into the building that first day. And so I'd park my car, walk up into the building. It was almost like when you open the door and I'd smell that smell of the office building, the kind of stale air that's in there. I get a feeling in me just from that smell. And then I get to my office and things would go okay. And sometimes it would last, I don't know, you know, half a day, maybe a week. But inevitably, I'd have a conversation with somebody and they'd start complaining about something at work. And then we'd have a meeting. And all those little side things that bugged me so much about work would come back. And just like magic, that little positive feeling, the motivation and all these grand plans I have would just be ground down under the weight of this culture that's there. And I've heard other people tell me that same kind of thing before. Maybe you can relate to that. So that's work. I'm not really knocking on work overall, although I know there's a lot more and more pressure around companies to perform, and they're putting a lot more of that poor pressure on their employees because of that, and that's real. And I'm just saying that that's something you need to be aware of, and that it won't go away. It's always going to be there because groups, any group, any tribe, any family, any club has its characteristics, and they don't change readily because they're made to kind of keep the status quo. So let's say that y'all are all excited and you've done a bunch of little experiments and you know what you want to do. And I know actually all of y'all are on the track of something that you want to work on doing more seriously. So say you're working at a big bank in Charlotte like I used to do, and you're the kind of person who, there's a guy who wants to do flower arranging or whatever. I was into photography. And you get all excited about it, and maybe you start thinking, hey, someday I'll start a company about this, and you talk to a couple of people who work there. You know, one of the things that can happen is that when you're in the environment of work, people like you to be kind of how you are because they rely on you, they count on you, and you wanted to change or you wanted to do something different, especially if it's something they can't appreciate. There's going to be a reaction from that tribe to you about that that's going to tend to push back on you and say, you know, wait, Olivia, wait, Elizabeth, don't go do that. What are you thinking? I mean, you can't go do that. You know, you're a banker. You've worked here forever. You don't know anything. You know, Alan, what are you going to do? How are you going to go make that? You can't make any money doing that. And who says that you're any good at that anyway? And all it takes is a couple of those comments, and any dreams of that are done, and you're probably bummed out, and you might not even do anything for months because of those comments. And those aren't coming necessarily from people who know what they're talking about. It's more just a reaction to something wanting to change. So just like all these other families and groups we talked about, there's a pushback from that. And it's also true within your family. That can be threatening to people in your family. You know, if I wanted to do something different, my wife may be nervous, well, what's going to happen to me? You know, or if you want to do something different. And so all of that is just one more kind of hurdle that gets put in front of you when you're working towards trying to push them all away and grow into this great thing that you were born to do and to work on. So let's talk about how, now that we've kind of talked about how these cultures can hold us back, let's talk about a different kind of tribe. Let's talk about a tribe that could help us find a way. Something like Elizabeth's great examples of the Girl Scouts or the positive marketing group that she was a part of. You can find these groups. And so that's what we're going to spend the rest of the time today talking about, the next 30 minutes or so. Okay, so think back to childhood and the story of Cinderella. I've got a picture in front of me of the fairy godmother coming down and turning Cinderella's rags into that beautiful gown that she wore to the ball. And a lot of people think about Cinderella as sort of the equivalent of winning the lottery, where somebody came in and picked you out and you were really born to be a princess, and we finally rescued you from your drudgery. Right. And so that's one angle on the story. But what I like to think about the fairy godmother is, the fairy godmother is like the person who came in and saw who Cinderella really was and what her gifts really were. And her stepmother, her stepsisters and her stepmother, right, were awful, and they hated her, and they made her be the maid for their house, and they never gave her any respect. And so what the fairy godmother is a great symbol for the people who are out there who can help, who do know about what you want to do, who do know about floral arranging or photography, and they love it just like you love it, and maybe they've been doing it for a long time, and they know that those hurdles that your coworker were bringing up are BS, that they're not true, and that there's plenty of people who work around it and make money, or whatever the objection was they brought up. So the fairy godmothers are the kind of people that you'll run into when you start to find your new tribe. And another kind of modern-day example of a fairy godmother is this TV show called What Not to Wear. Do you guys know what that show is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm sticking on a fashion theme tonight, so you know the fairy godmother's making a dress. So what Stacy and Clinton are the two people on What Not to Wear, and it's a makeover show where they pick a regular woman and they secretly film her in her you know, her worst clothes, I'm sure, her sweats going to the grocery store and that kind of thing. And then they bring her in and they embarrass her by showing that, but then they give her a bunch of money and they help her put together a new, whole new wardrobe so that she inevitably turns out just to be beautiful and just, you know, a whole new person. And the reason I like that show is not so much the fashion and everything, it's more that just the transformation that you see these women go through when they wear clothes that they feel like really shows through what they could be or what their beauty is. And it's just amazing. They stand up straighter. A lot of them later on will go through and make changes in their life and their jobs, and all because of they've just learned how to dress in a way that where they feel good about themselves again. So Stacy and Clinton, fairy godmother, whatever you want to think about it, I mean, that's what I want for all of you, is to find people who can appreciate these new gifts that you're developing that maybe have not been ever appreciated in your life, in your family, or certainly in a job you may have had before that was just your normal career that you got into. But these people are so important. You know, with your job, it's as I talked about that guy David, I mean, it could be literally life or death. That's extreme, but for your dream, it is life or death, because you won't go very far, or it's going to take you a lot longer to go where you want to do if you don't have people out there who can really see what you have to offer and then help you see where you are today and how you can develop it. So that's the purpose of finding these new tribes. So what is it? What's another thing about these tribes? And I'll pause for a minute. So I'm going to come in a minute and tell you some examples of these. We'll make it clear. But for now, just think about groups like Elizabeth's Business Marketing Association. So one of the other things that will happen as you get involved is you might find your fairy godmother, hopefully. Also, you'll start to see how you'll start to appreciate the variety in these new areas that you're going into that you might not know otherwise. And one example to kind of give you a mental picture on this, I remember about probably 4 or 5 years ago, I started traveling to Asia a lot for business, and I went to Japan very regularly. And the first time we went over to Japan, I really noticed that as a white male, how different I felt from everybody, because Japan is a very homogenous society, and there's really not a lot of people who aren't native Japanese who live there, even Tokyo, which is one of the biggest cities in the world. And it was really funny to me, because one of the things that the Japanese businessmen would tell me is that they had a hard time distinguishing between us white males who were all going over there. They just couldn't tell who looked different. And it was really funny, because I kind of felt the same way about them. And so a lot of them have business cards with their picture on them. like a photograph of them, kind of like a realtor's business card or something. And we really appreciated doing that and started put our own pictures on our cards just because it made it so much easier when you couldn't read the name to tell kind of who was who. But a funny thing happened for me as I went back, several times over the years after that. And what I started to see was I started to appreciate how varied these Japanese people really looked. They were all the same. Yeah, they all had black hair, but and dark eyes. But then I started to notice differences between the people, and then I could tell what country they came from, and then I could tell sort of what region in Japan they came from. And I had an idea that I'd started working on, but didn't get to finish before I stopped going to Japan. But where I was taking portraits of Japanese people to show us Western folks how varied their faces really are, just like ours, even though because we don't understand them and we don't know much about their culture, from the first view, we see from a really coarse view. So you can think of like a big crowd of faces that all have black hair and dark eyes. That's the first thing you notice. And it takes spending time with people regularly to start to appreciate the finer and finer details that really make people different. So I tell you that story to think about your own experience of these new areas that you want to go into. And I use my photography examples a lot. When I started taking photographs, I didn't really know much about what I was attracted to or what kind of photography I wanted to do. But as soon as I started going to a local monthly photography club, I realized that I had a different interest in photography than a lot of these people did. There was one guy who was kind of an older guy with a big gray beard. He was really quiet. He almost never said anything. But he traveled around to the botanical gardens all over the state and took really lovely pictures of close-up pictures of flowers. And that's really all he did. He just loved taking pictures of flowers. And the guy who ran our group name was Joe. And I remember Joe telling me one night when we were at a group talking, Joe's kind of a, he grew up in Philadelphia. He's proud to call himself a blue-collar guy, but he went to school and he ended up getting a Master's of Fine Arts from the University of Chicago. And so he has a real pedigree in photography, but he's still really proud of his roots. So he drives a Harley-Davidson and he wears leather jackets and he's kind of a tough guy. So we're at this meeting and we're talking and we were talking about the kind of pictures we took. And what I was doing is taking portraits mostly of my girls at the time. And I remember Joe saying, he takes pictures of our architecture and it's just lovely, lovely pictures of buildings. He knows how to light an interior like of a concert hall, or I've seen these pictures he's taken of buildings at night outside that are just gorgeous. I mean, equal to anything you would see anywhere. And obviously he's a professional, but he was saying, if you want me to take a picture of a building, no problem. But I can't take a picture of people because, I just hate kids. And he just couldn't deal with it. And I saw it because I saw him take some pictures and they were better than average, but they didn't have that kind of spirit or that fire. So what you'll find is as you start to hang around with your people or you find your new group of these people who appreciate what you're trying to do and what you're really good at, you'll start to see that, oh, wow, there's a lot more to this world than I had ever known, and that you start to appreciate, too, what it is about you that's really unique and what you're drawn to different than other people. And that helps you find other ways to express yourself and other opportunities to go further with what you're doing. So the other thing you can do here is these groups are a great place to find mentors. And that's another thing that's really critical for your development is to find people who have been there and done that, who are, 3, 4, 5 years ahead of where you are, who know all the problems and can help you skip some of the steps along the way. And those kind of people hang out at these groups. A lot of times those kind of people, the people who start these groups, because they start the groups because they like to share what they do and they like to connect people. And so that connecting you with other people is another role that a lot of these small groups play. And they are happy to hook you up with other opportunities or other groups or other things to learn, and they can help you see from where you are now, where do you want to go. So those are all the benefits of finding these special groups. The other thing that can happen is we talked about making a cool projects last week. And one of the things that these groups a lot of times will allow you to do is go out with people who like what you do and do something with them. So you don't even have to invent something new. You can just join in something that's already happening. So that photography group I was in, they would go out and do nighttime shoots. One time we got up on top of a overpass that overlooked the downtown Charlotte skyline, and everybody was there right as the sun was setting. And I could watch how these people, some of whom were really have been doing this a long time, were professionals. How did they think about things, and what do they look at? What were they doing different than me? And I never would have gotten that from reading a book or even going to a seminar. But when you're with other people, it's more fun, and you just pick up on so many more things than you would when you're trying to do something by yourself. Okay, so let me see. Do you guys have any questions at this point?
No, I don't.
Okay, so let's talk about where do you find some of these groups and what do they look like. So one of my favorites is a website called Meetup.com. And I think I talked about it in one of our earlier sessions about how to generate ideas for yourself. And actually, a lot of those places I told you about at the beginning about ways to find ideas for things you might like or not that you want to try, those are the same places I'm going to send you right now to go look for people to hang out with, for new tribes for you. And so there are lots of online and offline ways to get together with people. So some of the online places are groups like Google and Yahoo both have groups, and what they do, they form around different interests, and you can look them up. There are also specific topical groups that are in Facebook and LinkedIn if you're on those, and if you're not, I would recommend getting on those. And even on Twitter now, I'll tell you what Twitter is. Do you all know what Twitter is?
This is what I do.
Okay, so Twitter, is this kind of micro-blogging where people are sending out almost instant messages to their list of people. And they do this thing on there called a hashtag. It's a little number sign, capital 3 on your keyboard. And there'll be different groups on different hashtags, like the author Barbara Scher has one called Idea Party. And every Thursday, people will get on at the same time, and you can set up a search for that hashtag, and any message that goes out that people put that in, you can read it. So there are groups on careers and all kinds of things on Twitter now where people are just posting links to different information, so that's another place to look. So those are all good examples of online groups. And then as far as groups where you can get together with people in person, I was starting to talk about Meetup. And Meetup.com I really like because it has so much variety in the types of groups that it has. And there's a couple of ways you can use it. One is that obviously you can sign up for a group and you can go attend a meeting in person. The other thing you can do is just start going and looking at the different groups and then seeing, you can just start reading what they're doing. And you can look at other cities than your own. But I know in Charlotte there are about 140 meetings in all kinds of different areas every month. And one of the ones that I went to just to try it out was a screenwriters group here in Charlotte. And, I thought, first of all, how many screenwriters are there in Charlotte, North Carolina? I didn't know there were any other than in New York or Los Angeles. But it turned out there were about 18 people who came. And again, like I said with the photography, is the funny thing for me was just how specific and different every person was. There were people who were writing science fiction stories. There were people who were writing comedies. And the girl who organized the group and who runs it, her name is Corey, and she had lived in Los Angeles and had a screenplay option before, so she was doing it. So I come to this group, and there was even this she's not a little old lady, but she was probably in her maybe late 60s, African-American woman with the sweetest face, and she was just like she just seemed like the nicest, sweetest person. And so I'd met her, and we were talking about what she did, and then it turns out she writes horror films. And so she was talking about the Bride of Death, or this new one that she had just written, and it was telling us all the details about what these, you know, all the horrible things that were going to happen in the script that she had done. And she'd actually had one of her scripts bought before. And so it just goes to show you that, you know, I'm not sure that she got a lot of support growing up for writing horror film scripts, but she had found a group of people that she could interact with who appreciated the whole script writing thing. And they were all into, like, what software do you use to write the scripts, and how do you format them? Everything from that to, like, how do you approach someone to sell a screenplay, to what's the right kind of story arc for writing a screenplay. I was just fascinated. And I just went because it was something on my someday list that I talked to you all about, and it was something I wanted to try out. And so I just went, and they were totally nice to me. And I just told them, you know, I'm just here to learn. I haven't written any screenplays. You know, I'm working on a book, but I'm just here to learn. And it was great. I met a lot of really cool people, and I didn't go back again because it wasn't something I wanted to pursue. But there are a lot of opportunities like that, you know, everywhere, and they're really either no cost or really low cost. I think it's, you know, she charges $5 a year just to help pay for the meetup site. So there are a lot of groups like that. Then there's groups like associations like Elizabeth, you've been involved in, and different trade groups who get together who are all in the same industry.
Yeah.
And generally, these people are really welcome to having new members. I mean, because they're always trying to have more people come because they're losing people continually. So they are more than happy to have people get involved and do whatever they want to do. All right, so let's say you found a group that you like and you want to get involved. So how do you start to do something when it's some area that's maybe new to you, or something that's just an interest that you think you have, or you might think, you know, I'm going to be really good at this, but you're kind of tentative and it's a new dream, or, you know, little dreams are kind of delicate when you first start to do something new, and you're, you know, we all feel kind of sensitive about our skills, and there's a point when you're really getting going that you really need encouragement more than direct feedback. And actually, next week I'm going to talk about how do you handle a higher level of feedback and deal with that kind of the tender ego that you have when you're starting to do something new. And so one of the things I recommend when you first start trying to do something like this, especially if it's something you've never done before or that you don't know a lot about, is just start going to finding these online groups, or even find people who are really passionate about your subject who write blogs, and just start following them. I did this a couple of years ago. Another thing on my Sunday list, or my interest list, is watches. I like fancy watches. And I started buying them on eBay, and buying just old-timey watches. I just wanted them for some reason. I got it out of my system. I'm done with it now. But for a while, I was really looking at these, and I was trying to understand kind of like, you know, what types, just more about how to buy them and what was out there and different things. And so I found a website. And the interesting thing was, as I looked at the discussions they had on these groups, I started to hear how people who were serious watch people talked about watches. So I started to learn about some of the different brands and some of the things to be careful about with watches, and how to maintain them, and where do people get together to show their watches. And these guys were really serious. I mean, they would take a picture of the latest one they bought, and they'd have pictures of their collections, and they were building real relationships through this discussion that was going on online. But I could do the whole thing without having to really put myself out there, because I wasn't ready for that. At that point. And there's a name for this, for that activity. Do you all know what that's called when you just read stuff but you don't contribute?
No.
Voyeurism.
Well, that's true. That's a good one. it's called lurking. And lurking sounds like a horrible name. And I have this image in my head of some guy dark in the shadows with a big cape on or something, ready to jump on you. But lurking is actually a really good thing, and it's encouraged online, and it's how you learn the rules of these different groups. So we talked about the rules of the Boy Scouts before, and the unwritten rules of our families. Well, there are kind of etiquette rules about some of these groups too. And so the other thing you learn by lurking is how they interact and how formal to be. And you learn, you get to see people sort of get smacked down. A lot of those groups really frown on really negative comments, but some encourage it. And so by watching for a while, you get a sense of what's okay to do and how to get involved and how do you post your first messages, and if you really want to get answers back, how do you do that in a way that's effective? So lurking is a great thing. And so I would say lurk before you leap. Just remember that. And so that's a really safe way to go out and to start to get the experience of finding a supportive group, even if you're not directly involved with it yet. So lurk before you leap. And then the next thing, kind of level of that, is to get involved with these small groups, either online or these groups that you can find in your local communities. And a great way to get the most out of that is again, you almost like the equivalent of lurking, I guess, at a new place. You come and visit a couple of meetings. You start to see how they go. And the best thing to do is just to introduce yourself to people while you're there. And then if you really want to get involved, a lot of times they'll offer like more in-depth classes sometimes or workshops. For example, in my photography group, they had a portfolio group that we got together every week for a long time, and it was just a small group of us, six people. And so I really got to know those people. And once I knew them, I sort of felt like I was kind of in the group or whatever, and then it was a lot more comfortable coming to the bigger group and contributing and sharing things because I'd kind of learn more. And I learned a lot from them as well. So that's a great way to get involved. The other thing you can do is just offer to serve on committees of these groups and take a leadership role or a more significant role with that. Those are all ways to get to start building relationships with some of the people in the group that then will allow you to ask for more help down the road and to get to know them better and to have them be some of your friends. So that's how we start building, you know, this new tribe. So one thing too I want to say is that you can have as many of these as you want. So I've lived in Charlotte for so long that I'm interested in so many things that I rarely go anywhere that I don't run into somebody that I know either from a job I've had or some interest group that I've been involved in. There's the photography group is one. There's a coaching group I was in for a while, and so I have kind of my little groups. They're all kind of like all separate worlds. There's very few overlaps in them, but they've all. They're all good places for me to go when I want to be part of or want to do more with whatever that part of my life is that I want to go do. So you don't have to have just one. And so once you start to get involved and you're contributing and you're part of the group and you're doing more with it, you can start to pay attention to what do the groups feel like. If you know about Facebook and LinkedIn, you know that Facebook is kind of like, shorts and sandals, and LinkedIn is kind of like a business suit. And the way you present yourself and you post things on those two things really needs to be kind of different. You know, Facebook, you got pictures of your family vacation and your friends. I think we're all on Facebook. I think we're all connected. If not, we should be. And then LinkedIn is more about your professional life and what you do for your job. So there's different worlds even in these kind of online spaces. So the other thing you can do is say you want to, I'm trying to think of an example. If you've been in for me, here's a good one. So when I came up, I think I told you all, I have a PhD in physics. And so I had been with these, you know, scientists, guys, geeks is a less friendly term. But that's the people I hung out with in school and especially in grad school. I mean, that was all the people I knew and everything. And they have a real different kind of value set about things than people do in the business world. And so one of the things that that was kind of important for me is I realized that I didn't really want to stay in that world with the scientist people, is getting out amongst other folks. And so that was a big part of what I learned in my first job, was sort of trying on to see kind of what other groups felt like, to see, is this going to be a better fit for me? So if you have if you're really interested in medicine and you've never been a doctor and you've never been around there, I mean, you might want to go volunteer with a group of doctors going on a mission trip or something and just hang out with them to see what their world is like and what do they talk about. And then sometimes you'll have this really neat experience that where you'll go to a group and you'll get to know people and it'll just be like, oh, you know, you guys are just like me, you know. And I remember when I went to college, going from a small town to a liberal arts school, and I remember getting there and thinking, oh, these are my people. You know, these are the folks that I wanted to be around that I've never been around before. And, I mean, that's really a powerful experience when you find that. And you can look for it by trying out different groups of things that you like. And when you get around those people, you'll just know that this is something that I've got this in common with these people when we really share a bond. And that'll be a good sign that this is somewhere you're supposed to be, and these are people that can help you. So what I'd like to do now is I'd like you all to think about something that you want to try that is maybe something that you don't know anybody else who does it, and let's just take some examples and try to come up with how you might get started on that. And it doesn't have to be something serious. I just want to go through the thinking process of finding some of these groups. Does anybody want to throw anything out?
This is Elizabeth. I'm still thinking, so.
Okay.
Me too. That threw me for a loop. I might think a little longer.
Oh, that's all right. Okay.
Here's one, Elizabeth. I always thought bottles were cool, like kind of like the old-fashioned different color bottles and things like
okay.
that.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that's a good one. So stuff like that. Is a good place. There's a couple places that are really good. One would be from a kind of collecting standpoint, there's probably a group who talks about that on one of those places, on like a Yahoo groups or Google groups. I'm sure that there's somebody who has a blog about those, and that'd be something you could read and maybe even ask them about. The other thing I think about is websites like Etsy. It's ETSY.com. Do y'all know that website?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, I don't. What is that?
Oh, yeah, Regina. It's kind of like an eBay where you can set up your own store, and it's for people who make like arts and crafts kind of stuff. So like homemade books or even paintings or photographs, and then you can sell your stuff online. And there's probably thousands of people doing it now, and there's some really neat stuff on there. And so if you're interested in it, Elizabeth, we didn't talk about what it was about it, but if it was kind of less collecting than doing something with them, maybe from an art perspective, there may be some people who do that on there. And then the other thing is that those are the kind of things that I think about like at flea markets and places like that. You'll see people who have a lot of those, and those will be places if you were kind of more outgoing person where you could go and talk to somebody in person about how they got into that or who else collects those and meet people.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So I just wanted to do an example of this real time to show you that there's a lot of ways to kind of tackle this. And so I'll send out the list of all those links to the websites I talked about when I send out the summary email. So, well, let me open it up for questions or comments or anything. Did this make you think about anything? Or?
I had a question. This is Elizabeth.
Yeah.
If you join, okay, because I've gone to some groups, and do you recommend if you go there and you're kind of like not totally like appalled or anything, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of like, oh, I'm not really sure. Do you recommend going back again, or do you recommend just kind of marking that off and moving on to something else? Or
yeah, I would kind of do like we talked about with the experiments we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's like a 6 or 7 or an 8, and you don't have anything else really burning at the time and you've got the time, I would go back. You know, if it's higher than that, I would definitely do it. And if it's lower than that, I wouldn't worry too much, you know, and I wouldn't force it, because I think a lot of times your intuition is really good about that, and you'll know kind of the right thing.
Great, thanks.
Yeah. Well, I really want y'all to understand that, tribes, is a serious thing and a powerful thing. And it's not something people talk about very much, but that it's really one of those kind of, it's like air. You don't see it. It's always there. You kind of count on it. The same thing with all these groups we're involved in, and they're really different. And just like air, if you didn't have it and you were like breathing carbon monoxide or something in a different environment, it would be really harmful for you. Or if you're like a tree and you breathe carbon dioxide, you're happy, but you're not happy with oxygen. That's an example. So you've got to find your right environment, and just you've got this little delicate flower inside of you that you're going to grow into this beautiful plant, and you want to you need to find people who can appreciate that so that they can help you kind of nourish that, the growth of that, especially when you're first getting started. But even as you go along, there's going to be a lot of resistance from inside of you that we've talked about before, just the fears that come up whenever we want to do something different, because our bodies try to tell us to stay safe and the same. But adding the cultural pressure that we have on us from our current families and everything, finding that group who really appreciates you is huge. And it's a core, like, foundational element of being successful at doing work that you're meant to do. So I really hope you all get that from me, that I'm really want this for you, and you need to pay attention to this for you. This is a key element. And so, what's that?
We feel you, buddy.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, it's night and day. If you find the right group, I'm telling you, cause like I'm in a writer's group right now with other people who are writing books, and there's no way I could have done this if I hadn't had them, the support of them and the ideas and the connections and everything else. It would not have been possible. So pay attention to this. There's lots of ways to find it, just like there are lots of ways to try things out, and I'll send some of this to you. And don't be afraid to experiment, just like with everything else. You know, you don't have to commit. Go lurk. If you're more introverted and you like to do things online, that's a good way to do that. A lot of people build great relationships over Twitter. I have some good friends who've done that. Or if you want to get out there and you're ready to meet some other people, that's a super way, too, to get involved in some projects and start doing more. So tonight I'm going to leave you with a quote from one of my mentors, Barbara Sher. She says, isolation is the dream killer. That's one of her, if she wanted to say one thing about what her whole life was. And Barbara really believes that there's nothing wrong with any of us or any of you, that when we start to do things we want to do and we stop or we feel held back, there's nothing wrong with us. It's just that there's so many pressures, this culture being one of them, to not do anything different, that we can feel wrong. You know. Think about that poor guy who thought that he was all wrong at Wachovia, or those people who drank the Kool-Aid. You know, they all thought that they were doing the right thing because all they knew was the society that they were in, but they were just in the wrong place for them. And so, you know, don't be isolated. And when you get scared, you tend to isolate yourself. So don't be afraid and be excited about, it's more than don't be afraid. I mean, be excited about trying these things out, because when you find your fairy godmother or your Clinton, your fairy dresser, you will be amazed at how much difference that will make for you, and it can just light a spark that can take you to a whole nother level very quickly. And so that's what's waiting for you when you go out and do this. So get going on it, take something and try it.